Hello and welcome to the Back to Movement podcast. I'm your host, Bernadette. This show covers everything you need to know about back pain, fitness, wellness, and movement science. It's evidence-based and bringing you the latest scientific research along with expert tips. And my mission here is to help you achieve a healthy back, leading you to a life full of vitality with the freedom of movement. And today, I am incredibly excited to introduce our guest, Diane Bondi. Hello. Diane is an author, a celebrated yoga and Pilates teacher, and a passionate social justice activist. We are going to explore a topic that affects so many women, autoimmune conditions, and discuss how movement and exercise can play a crucial role in managing these conditions. So without further ado, please help me welcome Diane Bondi to the Back to Movement podcast. And Diane, thank you so much for being here. I am so excited. And let's start by getting to know you a little bit better. What inspired you to become a movement coach?
Well, thank you, Bernadette. I feel really fortunate to be on the Back to Movement podcast. It's a long kind of sordid story. So my parents are both pretty active people, and both of them were like athletes in high school and did lots of activities in high school. So I always grew up around parents that were moving, walking, running. My dad was into skipping. Like, have you ever seen people doing the skipping with the fancy jumping, like boxers doing the skip? There's a couple of people I follow on Instagram that do this incredible skipping routine. And when I was a kid, I used to be able to do that. Like, my parents were really into riding your bike, going for a walk, going running, lifting weights. When the gym craze began in the mid-1970s, both my parents had gym memberships. Like, it was just something that I always grew up with. And my mom started practicing yoga when I was really little. So just for, you know, if you haven't heard the story before, but my parents emigrated to Canada from Barbados by way of England. So they went to school in England. My dad's an engineer. My mother's a nurse. And then they emigrated to Canada and set up our home in Canada. They emigrated in the 60s, in the late 60s. And so I came from a background of people who are always on the move. And when my mother decided, when they decided to have a family, my mom stayed home for probably the first 10 years. She only worked kind of part-time. And she was overwhelmed by three kids under the age of four and not having any help, not having any family, not having any support or community. So she turned to her exercise routines to help her alleviate some of the stress and sometimes keep us a little bit entertained. So my brother and sister were really little. They're twins. So when they were less than a year old, my mom would do yoga in the basement when they were napping. And because I was a precocious three-year-old, you weren't going to keep me out of whatever it is my mother was doing. So she introduced me to the movements that she was doing as a way to kind of get her movement in. And I distinctly remember that she used to love to watch the soap opera General Hospital. And at that time in the 70s, it was 30 minutes. And so she would bribe me to do yoga with her for 30 minutes. And then I had to be quiet for 30 minutes so she could watch her show. And she called that being quiet kind of like meditation. But she actually would just give me like something to do, some task to do, or she'd give me a piece of candy or whatever. And that's how I kind of started. And she was always into going to jazzercise. And she had the, you know, the Jane Fonda tapes. And she had all that kind of stuff. So that stuff was all around me when I was growing up. So it just seemed like a natural progression. I've always been on the track team or, you know, playing softball. Like, we were always doing something as kids. My brother played hockey. So we were pretty active. And it just seemed like a natural progression for me to continue to share what I know about movement with others and how it made me feel and how it helped me manage stress and anxiety and all of those things before we knew that that was a thing, you know?
Yeah, such an inspiring story and a wonderful example how we shape our kids. Like, yeah. Your mother was an inspiration, right? She
definitely
gave you a really important tool for life, right?
Yes.
So you have to manage stress and, you know, how to cope with life, you know, because exercise does help with that, right? We're going to go down and we're going to discuss this further, but such a great story and a wonderful example how we shape our kids, you know, the next generation, because kids, they watch us, like my son, too. I have a 9-year-old son. And he knows how important we start our day on Saturday morning with the physical activity. It can be walking. We go to the gym together. We do something together and then we talk. You know, if we go for a walk, it's so good. And he asked me questions like, hey, mom, you know, and it turns out to be not just a physical activity, but it's kind of like a bond.
Yeah, an emotional bond for sure. Yeah. And it's a way to spend time with your kids. That's active. And, you know, we, as much as we like to go to movies and things like that, we have the best fun when we're doing, you know, activities. And when my kids were little, they had a jungle gym in the backyard, swings. We went to the park a lot. My kids rode two-wheel bikes pretty early. I remember people saying to me, how old's your son? I'd be like, 4. And he's like, he's riding a two-wheeler. I'm like, yeah. You know what I mean? He was just ready. He had a scooter and from a scooter to a two-wheeler, like, my kids were always super active. My kids were always outside. We have a basketball net in the driveway. Like, they were always doing something because we were always doing something. I ran a half marathon not knowing I was pregnant with my oldest son. I didn't even know. I thought my time was just slow because I, you know, didn't train enough or whatever. But I didn't realize my time was slow and because I was pregnant. I had no idea. But, you know, they grew up moving. I remember I had my first ultrasound with Nathan and his little legs were down and they were running. And I remember the ultrasound technician said, where is he going? I go, that is a really good question. So my kids were always in the fray. I mean, I would run road races with them in a jogging stroller. So I just continued that relationship with my kids. They now go to the gym. They both have gym memberships. We have a gym in our garage. They played travel sports. Not so much anymore that they're older and they're starting to move into their adult life. They don't do travel sports anymore, but we were the travel sports people with the minivan and the cooler and running all over, you know, the country where my kids were playing basketball and soccer. So I passed that on to my kids. They ran track. They did all those things. And it was just something that was modeled to me that I modeled to my kids.
Yeah, that's amazing and wonderful example, you know. It's nice. Thank you for sharing your story, Diane.
Of course, of course.
The reason I actually invited you to this podcast, and you probably know that, is that you had a social media post about autoimmune conditions, and that post really resonated with me. I was like, I have to reach out to this girl. It's just, we have to discuss this further because it really resonated with me deeply because I do too have an autoimmune condition. And your post mentioned a mom, a woman whose body was ran down. She could hardly move and was in consistent pain. And you literally described me in my 20s when I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's disease. It was very early for me. I was probably 20 or 21. Mm-hmm. And reading that took me back, you know, to my early 20s when I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's disease. And that time I felt like my body was betraying me, you know, simple tasks. Became exhausting.
Yes.
And chronic pain was relentless. So it was always there. And what's important that it wasn't just physical. It took a toll on my mental and emotional well-being as well. Because I was watching all my friends having a wonderful time, you know, they are going out, enjoying life. And I was in constant pain in my early 20s. You know,
I can understand that.
Was hurting. I was always tired, even if I slept 12 hours. And that was the point that, oh my God, we really need to do something about it. And going to the gym or do anything was hard.
You know,
it was really, really challenging for me. I felt like I was trapped in my own body, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So anyway, that really resonated with me. And that's when I actually started doing Pilates. I went to the doctor and they told me I have to do something a little bit not as, you know, like a low impact exercise. Yes. So Pilates would be a great start. And of course, for my low back too, because I was in constant pain. And so that's how I actually ended up with Pilates. So do you have an autoimmune conditions? Or
I do. And that's why I posted that post. And it was, I think it was an excerpt from a research study that had linked the majority of autoimmune diseases happen to women. It's some ridiculous statistic, upwards of about 80% of autoimmune diseases affect women. Like, men have a very low instance of autoimmune disease. As you have Hashimoto's, I have the flip side of that. I have Graves' disease, where yours is an underactive thyroid.
Yes.
Mine is a hyperactive thyroid. And my mother had it as well. And her, both of ours is in remission. Mine's been in remission for about 6 years, but I was on a course of treatment and I went down a rabbit hole at looking at what could I do for my body physically to help me through this time, much like you did with Pilates, because I had already been active. I was already doing a consistent yoga program and walking and running and doing all the things. But I started the same way you felt betrayed by your body when you got sick in your 20s. This happened to me in my 40s. The same way that you felt sick about that or felt betrayed by your body, I felt the same way. And through my yoga practice, I had to remember that as much as I felt betrayed by my body, that my body was still showing up for me the best way it could when it was sick and struggling. So I was still able to get up and go to work and teach my yoga classes and look after my boys and more or less be there, like you, exhausted. I had like tremors, sweating. I was profusely losing weight because it's a hyperactive thyroid. I was getting my menstrual cycle like every 10 days and it was lasting for 6 days. And everybody was telling me, you know, it's menopause, and people were writing all these symptoms off. And I had gone to a bunch of doctors and nobody could seem to finally pinpoint it until I was stuck in a bathroom in an airport. So I used to travel a lot for work and I was in the airport bathroom and I was shaking so violently that I couldn't get out of the bathroom stall. So someone had to call security to get me out of the bathroom, and I ended up going back to the doctor and saying, listen, something's really wrong with me. They've done all the blood work and they couldn't seem to find anything. Turned out they didn't do a full thyroid panel. And had they done the full blood work for the thyroid panel, they would have noticed that I had a hyperactive thyroid. And I remember sitting across from the doctor and the doctor looking at me and saying, I can hear your heart beating from here. And them putting me on beta blockers right away because I was literally weeks out from having a heart attack. And it was just pure luck that I had been in the right place at the right time for my doctor to catch it. And then, you know, I started seeing an endocrinologist and I spent a whole year of treatment. But during that treatment, I thought to myself, what could I be doing better for myself? Where can I start to relieve maybe some stress? Because as we know, women tend to hold stress differently than others, right? We tend to take on the burdens of the household, the burdens of raising children. We tend to take on more of our fair share of either domestic duties or emotional labor and things like that. And there's research that indicates, you know, new research that indicates, especially now that we're only now researching women's health in the last 5 or 6 years, that a lot of this additional stress that we take on in our everyday lives are resulting in autoimmune diseases. And so that's when I started thinking to myself, I'm not going to look at my autoimmune disease as my body betraying me, because it was still showing up, not in the way I would have liked, but it was still showing up. I'm going to look at it as my body's asking me for help. It's saying to me, I'm trying really hard, Diane. I'm doing the best I can. I need some help. So I started to be really much more kind to my body in the way that I was treating it, because I was getting angry. I was getting frustrated. I didn't have all the tools. And then I thought to myself, I need to switch gears here, because your body is the most advanced piece of technology you will ever have. And every piece of it serves a function and is based on ancestry and evolution and all these things. And if we don't respect it, we won't know how to enjoy it. We won't know how to support it. And so I really took a deep dive, and this was part of my yoga practice. Let me take a deep dive into what's going on with my body. Let me figure out the best ways I can serve it. And let me pay attention and show up and see if I can start implementing either different exercise modalities, different sleep patterns. Maybe I need to go have a blood work up and see if I need to start supplementing my diet where I'm not getting enough, maybe vitamin D or vitamin B12 or whatever it was. So I really started thinking about how can I better A, fuel my body, and B, take care of my body, and C, reduce my stress so that I can help my body to heal, because it has the ability to heal itself. It really does. And it does in a lot of cases. So let me see if I give it the tools it needs, if it will, you know, if it will start to heal itself instead of me constantly depleting it because I'm angry at it.
That's great. You gave me a different perspective as soon as you said that your body was still showing up, you know, and that's amazing. I wish if someone told me this 20 years ago.
Yeah.
When I was diagnosed with that, you know,
yeah.
My body is trying to tell me something. And as soon as you said that, I realized how many things I had going on in my life. We actually moved to Australia.
Mm.
My boyfriend and I, we just started a life together, moving away from Hungary, from Europe, all the way down to Australia.
Very far.
We didn't know anyone. Mm. We moved there with two suitcases. I barely, you know, spoke English.
Hmm.
So it was stressful, you know, different country. I had a stressful work. My boss wasn't the best, you know. I mean, it was the best at the time.
Right.
Because I probably needed that. You know, I believe in that we have everything for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back, my job was stressful. I wasn't happy. I lived in a different country and I didn't even speak the language.
That's stressful. That's a lot. Or the culture is very different. The landscape is very different. You don't have your support systems around you. It's not like you can go out and hang out with your friends and maybe talk about what's happening. You don't know where to access certain resources. So that kind of stress has to manifest itself in your body somewhere. And there's a few great books that I like that talk to us about how we need to learn to respect our bodies. And one of them is called My Body Is Not an Apology by Sonia Renee Taylor. And The Body Keeps Score. Off the top of my head, I can't remember the author of that book. But those two books help us to realize that we are in relationship with our bodies and we don't need to be fighting them. And the truth of the matter is, at the end of the day, your genetics are going to win out above all else. There's a genetic code or an algorithm that has been set up in this incredible piece of technology that's going to always set back to its default, whether you fight it or not. And what we can do is give it the best opportunities to, you know, to maintain default or homeostasis or equilibrium, or we can fight against it and feel like garbage, right? And we have to be super intentional and mindful and paying attention to when our body's talking to us. And you know, primarily as women within this, you know, Western culture, we've been largely ignored through women's health and medicine, or we've been told to that it is our journey in life or our place in life to continue to suffer for whatever perceived wrong society seems to think that we have brought on the world, and we got to continue to suffer so that we must suffer in silence because that is our plight as a woman. And I'm here to say no more. That is not a thing, right? We were entitled to and are deserving of feeling good in our bodies, and we need to learn how to listen and adjust and figure out maybe what kind of movement modalities will feel better? What kind of things should I be eating that will make me feel better? What foods do I eat that don't make me feel good? Maybe I have an allergy to some of these things. Like, how long should I be sleeping? I mean, there's recently a study that says women need between 8 to 12 hours of sleep per night. It was believed that we needed 8 to 10, but that study was based on men only. We have different needs for our bodies. We are not small men. We are entirely a different body species, if you will, than men. And we have different needs. Our bodies have different requirements. And so far, we've been just like slugging along in a model that it was representative of one type of person. And humanity is a tapestry of all kinds of people and genders and identities and body types and, you know, ethnicities and races. And we need to find out what works best for Bernadette, what works best for Diane. And these two things might not be the same, even though we both present as women, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
Right? And, like, not one size fits all. One size never fits all. I have yet to find something that actually people can actually say that.
Absolutely. But you are a mother. I am a mother. But how much society pressures women? You need to do this. You need to do that.
You need to be everything.
You need to cook. You need to clean. You need to take care of your family. And it's very interesting because I had a comment. You know, you have goals, right? We all have
Everybody does.
What do we want to achieve in life? And I was sharing my goals with someone and they told me, oh, this is not a, this should not be your goal. You're a housewife.
And somebody else told you what your goals are?
That was actually a family member and I'm not going to say who it was.
Well, of course not. We won't out them here, but.
No. It was very interesting. And that at that point, I realized, oh my goodness, the pressure. And 10 years ago, if that person would tell me what she told me, I would be really upset. But this time, it was great. It was a reality check that, yes, I'm not just a housewife.
Yeah.
I'm not just a wife.
You're not one thing.
I have goals. I have my business.
Yes.
And it really even gave me more motivation.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You're like me.
But you know, the thing is, it was really, really funny. And I'm thinking, how much pressure do we have from society that we have to do, we have to be a certain way, a certain type. And I don't think there are rules anymore. You can be whoever you want to be. You can do whatever makes you happy at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
Because if not, then your body will tell you.
100%.
Your body will scream that, hey, I'm not happy.
Yeah. Your back is hurting all of a sudden. My shoulder's hurting all of a sudden. You have headaches all of a sudden. These are all things that can be triggered by stress. And the idea that somebody else had the nerve to tell you who you are is ridiculous. Like, I would never think to tell anybody else, you can't be that, you must be this. And there was a time in life and in the world and in our cultures that that was a thing. But thank goodness those days are long gone. As much as, you know, society tries to circle back to these ideas, people are not putting up with that anymore. You can be more than one thing. You don't only have to be one thing. And I don't know anybody who is just one thing. And I think being ambitious and having goals and wanting to live a life of purpose is amazing. And that's something that makes your heart happy. What at the end of the day is going to make your whole body happy. At the end of the day, that's going to make everybody around you happy. Because when you're miserable, don't you find your whole body, your whole family's miserable?
Exactly.
Don't you encounter other miserable people? You know what I mean? Yes.
And you said a key word, purpose. Purposeful. Purpose. But some women are happy to be a husband, and they are wonderful with that. And
good
and,
for them.
And that's amazing. And do it.
Yeah, 100%.
If you would like to do something else and your gut is telling you, then do it.
Absolutely. There's lots of women out there who want to be at home and raise their family. And I say hats off to you because that is a hard job. That is all.
Exactly.
And it doesn't get the recognition it deserves. It doesn't get the compensation it deserves. And it's really rewarding. And I grew up with a mom who worked outside of the house. So I never had the model of my mother staying home. And I just remembered other people that I knew or my other friends who had models of their mother staying home and coming home and asking my mother, why don't you stay home? She said, for a few reasons. For one, you know, I like to work. She was a nurse. I'm out there helping people and saving people. And that makes me happy. And I've always been interested in this. And I've always wanted to have children. And she just told me as a little girl, there's more to life for me and can be for you than being a stay-at-home mom. And there's nothing wrong with wanting those things, but there's nothing wrong with wanting other things too. Do what makes you happy. I'm in no way, you know, disclaiming or discounting. That's a hard work. And hats off to women who can stay home and manage a family because damn, that's hard work. And that deserves to be appropriately compensated. That just wasn't what was modeled in my house or what I wanted to do. And I think if you feel that fire in your belly, if you don't pursue it in some way, I think you'll live to regret it. You'll always wonder.
Yeah, exactly. I believe that too.
And if you do it and it fails, oh well, you learn something. What did you learn from that whole experience? And you try something else, or you don't. Like, life is the longest thing you're ever going to do. You know, people say life is short. Sure, life is short, and it moves faster the older I get. But it's also the longest thing you are ever going to do. It's the longest thing you are ever going to do. So why not do it with some variety, right? Why it'd be like wearing the same outfit every day or eating the same food every day, right? Like, why not color with all the crayons in the crayon box? Like, why not? Who says you can't?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Diane, given your experience as a movement professional, how do you think that exercise can help individuals who are dealing with these challenges, you know, the mental health or even the autoimmune conditions? And you even have that, so you can give us, you know.
Yeah. Some tips. Movement, you know, I know this sounds cliche, and I'm sure there's a hashtag somewhere on social media that I saw this. It's not an original thought here. But movement really is life. When I don't get in a movement practice, I don't feel great. And I am currently working with a client. I have a reformer. I teach reformer Pilates as well as yoga. And I do private sessions on my reformer. And I was taking my recycling out to the curb, and I noticed my neighbor was limping down the driveway. And I went over to them and I said, what's going on? And they said, well, I have type 2 diabetes and I have something going on in my toe and I have this, that, and the other thing going on. And I said, so what are you doing about it? Oh, well, I'm seeing my doctor. I'm on this. I'm on that. I go, okay. And what else are you doing about it? What other movement practices are you doing? And they kind of dipped their head and they said, I'm not really doing anything. I said, listen, do me a favor, come see me half an hour twice a week and let's see if we can get you moving, because they're going to Italy for a month. And I haven't been to Italy. I have been to Europe. I live in North America. Everything is paved and smooth and you can walk anywhere. Everything's nice. There's a sidewalk everywhere where I live in our neighborhood. But when you go to Europe, you know, you got to climb off of curbs. There's cobblestones. There's nowhere to walk. And you want to be able to have that mobility to enjoy life. And the way I kind of sold it to them is I said, listen, you want to be able to walk around and not worry that you're not going to be able to keep up or that you're going to need to sit down. So let's set a goal. Let's come and see me. It may or may not work, but I kind of knew it was going to work. I go, come and see me and let's see if we can get you walking for at least an hour, because you won't walk longer than an hour. You're going to sit down at a cafe. You're going to go into a bookstore or something, but let's get you comfortable walking for an hour, because they were limping. They were having a hard time getting up and down. And so we've been working together for about 8 weeks and it has been miraculous. Now, the goal was to just get them more mobility. So I got them on my reformer. I started working with, you know, getting mobility in their feet and their knees. I got them starting to move a little bit of weight. And then I prescribed for them a 20-minute walk every single day. I said, I don't want to hear any excuses that you're tired or it's just 20 minutes. Walk 10 minutes one way, turn around, walk 10 minutes the other way. Doesn't have to be fast. You don't have to put on your fitness tracker. If you just walk around the block a couple times, 20 minutes every day. No excuses. The only time I want you not to walk 20 minutes, just leisurely look at people's garden. I said, and see me twice a week. I said, and then see how you feel. And that 20 minutes for them turned into an hour. So we are well above our goal to get them walking for an hour. They went from walking like 500 meters, if that, 200 meters, just, you know, around the neighborhood, to walking 4K in a row at a decent pace. And that was not the goal. The goal was just to start moving. And they are coming to Pilates and loving it. And this is a person who does not exercise at all, is deeply deconditioned. They're now taking less of their type 2 diabetic medication. They've gotten rid of the pain in their feet. And they have, you know, it was their goal to lose weight and they've lost a little bit of weight and now they feel a little bit more mobile and they're less stressed about traveling because they know that they're going to be able to keep up and walk and see and do the things they do. Movement equals life. Movement equals longevity. And it doesn't matter what kind of shape you're in, doesn't matter what ability you have, doesn't matter if you're, you know, if you move through life in a wheelchair or whatever, any movement counts. And it doesn't have to be you working out hardcore an hour, 7 days a week, pushing heavy weight, unless that's what you love to do. Exactly. And unless that's some, you, movement works. 20 minutes of walking, do a little strength training. Maybe you want to do a couple push-ups. Maybe move some dirt around in your garden, like whatever it is, but try to get out there and move your body, because it will improve your flexibility. It will improve your strength. It will improve your balance. And all of these things are part and parcel to longevity. Especially leg strength, both in men and women, directly correlates to longevity and how long you live and the quality of your life. Because if you have leg strength, then you have balance, then you can move, then you have confidence, then you'll go out and hang out with your friends. And when you hang out with your friends, you feel better, or you'll go to the museum and you'll see that painting because you're not afraid to climb the stairs. Like, these are all things that directly will impact your life. And as a person with an autoimmune disease, I could probably lay down and be tired and wallow in all of that, because some days I do. It's not every day that, you know, but most days of the week I get up and I go, if I just go for a walk, it'll be feel better. Maybe I'll try going for a run. I'll roll out my yoga mat and move some stuff around. I'll get on my reformer. One time I was feeling sorry for myself and I posted on Instagram, I'm staying in bed for the next 3 days. And my personal trainer slid into my DMs and actually commented on my page. No, you won't. You're going to come see me tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And I'm like, shoot, you're right. You're right. And I went and I immediately felt better. Yeah. Whether it was a hardcore workout or not, moving your body is giving your body the tools to heal itself.
It's funny you mentioned Italy, because my parents actually just got to Italy today, a couple of hours ago.
Oh, nice!
The trip, yeah. My dad is 68 and my mom is 65, and they just started traveling.
Nice.
And I'm so grateful, because now they have the strength, because my mom actually had 3 back surgeries.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and her last back surgery was, it actually didn't go well. She had they had to put her in a artificial, you know, like in a coma for 5 days. They operated her through the tummy. It was back in 2011 and it didn't go well. They had to resuscitate her, you know, and has to wear compression stockings the rest of her life on her left leg. You know, they snapped the vena cava in her belly.
Oh.
They had to tie it. So anyway, she's a wonderful example that she still has the strength and the motivation to get up and do it. And there is no excuse.
Yeah. And I look at it, and it's changed the quality of her life. She's in Italy. I bet you when she was going through all of that surgery, that wasn't even a thing.
She travels every 3 months. She travels every 3 months.
Because she has a movement practice.
Yeah.
Because she has a movement practice. And again, it doesn't have to be huge. It can be something, right? I think that's an amazing story. And when people say to me, where do you find the motivation to work out? I don't have motivation to work out. I have discipline. That's it. I schedule it. I know that Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, Anthony and I are meeting together, whether I like it or not. And if I have to reschedule, I make sure I reschedule and I make sure I go, even if I don't feel like it. Even if I'm too tired, even if I'd rather do, I don't know, anything else, I know that this is an investment in my 62-year-old self, in my 65-year-old self, in my 80-year-old self. I know that I am putting that in the bank for the future. I'm loving it in the present, but I'm giving that gift to my future self.
Yeah, that's actually my motivation and discipline too. Actually, my mom gave me that because I actually started having, you know, low back pain. That was the time when she had low back pain too. So it's kind of like, you know, very, very interesting. Yeah. And I knew we're going to have a baby. I'm going to be pregnant. And when you're pregnant, you have extra load, you know, and you tend to have more pain, more anyway. And
Lots
I promised to myself that I don't want to be a mother who's suffering and lays in bed and cannot move. And even though I had days like that it was more painful.
Yeah.
I got on my reformer, I worked out and I moved, and I actually had gestational diabetes when I had pregnancy. So anyway, I had to move before eating my breakfast.
So yeah.
That was my treat, actually, having breakfast, because I didn't want to take medication.
Right. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
So anyway, it's an investment.
It totally is an investment. And, you know, when I was a fitness instructor in university, I used to think about how much time and energy we would put into maintaining our vehicles, like our cars, like how much time and energy you go for an oil change. I go for a tire rotation. If I hear something knocking in my car, I take it in for my tune-up. And because I went away to school and I would drive home, you know, a couple of weekends a month, I wanted to have a car that was in good running order because I didn't want to be stuck on the side of a highway somewhere. And I kept thinking to myself, we should be putting the same amount of care into our bodies, like the same amount of care, right? Like we should be paying attention to the signals that our bodies are giving us to eat and to drink and to move and, you know, and to interact with other people and have social moments or to have alone time. Like the body is giving us that biofeedback all the time. Like, but we've been trained to ignore it a lot of the times. Instead of ignoring it, leaning into it and saying, I need to rest today. Today isn't a go hard day, so I can do something, maybe a sweeter yoga practice. Maybe I'll just go out and, you know, piddle around in my garden for a little bit, whatever movement. And some days I'm like, ooh, I'm anxious. I've got a lot of pent up energy. I'm not, you know, I need to burn off some of this energy. I might go for a run or I might ride my bike. Or some days I'm like, you know what? I want to be strong. I want to be able to carry my groceries into my house by myself at 80. I don't like to check a bag. And I say this to my Pilates class. I teach Pilates a lot. I say to my Pilates class all the time, we're doing some upper body strength. We're doing some shoulder and chest work because I have a 40-pound carry-on. I put everything I get in my carry-on and nobody ever wants to help me huff that thing into the overhead bin. So my trainer and I did a video where he taped me picking up 40 pounds over my head, pressing 40 pounds in a shoulder press. And then we cut to me picking up my, I had my husband film me putting my 40-pound carry-on in the overhead bin. No problem. Like, no problem. And I want that, you know, I want to be able to carry groceries up the stairs if I decide that I'm going to live in a walk up in some fabulous city in the world at 80. Like, I really want to keep my options open for a life that has mobility and strength. And if I can invest in that now, invest in my future self, much like you did when you were a kid going to university, I'm going to invest in my education, right? I'm going to invest in, you know, buying a house. The same way we make that investment in other places of our lives, we can make that same investment in moving our bodies and being kind to our bodies and treating our bodies with respect.
So you really put all your belongings in your carry-on so you don't... Is that?
I very rarely check a bag. The only time I've checked a bag is I went to Australia for a month and I had to check a bag. Like there was just no way I was going to get
everything. I actually understand why. We just moved. This is not my spot here. Just letting everyone know that we just moved from Europe a month ago to back to the US. And our things are actually on a ship on the way.
Slowly making it across the transatlantic. Yeah, got you.
We flew from Frankfurt to Dallas and Lufthansa lost my luggage.
Yikes. See that? That kind of stuff gives me anxiety.
You see?
I don't do it. I don't.
Yes,
I don't.
It was 4 weeks ago and we are still waiting for the reimbursement. So anyway.
You haven't gotten your bags back? You still haven't got your bags back?
No, it's totally lost.
Totally gone. No, so it fell off into the ocean.
I don't know what's happened. I don't know. I don't know what's happened, but they have my luggage with my, this is my second podcast microphone. I have to buy another one.
I do not check a bag. I do not.
Anyway, so whoever flies with Lufthansa, just PS, this was a month ago. So anyway, now I understand why you do that. And the second, you really explained how mental health, you know, your mental health affects. Or actually you said that if you feel too much, you know, you have too much energy, you go for a run.
I do. A run, you know, a walk, my bike, something.
Yeah. And that's great. But then how do you feel after you did? Do you feel better?
I feel accomplished. I feel better. I have whole conversations. I'm sure people who are running by me or walking by me are like, give her a wide berth. Because I'm sure I'm having a whole conversation, right? I'm having a whole, and then I could have said this, but no, I should have said that. And then they have the nerve to do this. And I just work it all out on my bike or while I'm walking. Yeah. And, you know, people might walk by me and go, hey, Diane, like people in my neighborhood or whatever. I don't even see you because I am so internally focused. And, you know, every now and again, I'll look at my watch to see my pace or to see how far I've come or whatever. Or sometimes I just end up somewhere and I'm like, damn it, I turn around and run back. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I work out a lot of things. I have my best ideas when I'm out for a walk or a run. I come up with the best ideas. So I have a tendency to, you know, run with my phone and make voice recordings so that I don't forget when I get home, because I'm also a menopausal woman. So I forget stuff quite frequently. So I try to, you know, write things down, but I have my best moments of clarity when I'm by myself moving my body. Like, just whether I'm going through scenarios that I think could have gone better and I'm obsessing about it, it'll give me some time to work through that anxiety and move on, you know, or whether I'm like, I'm really having a hard time getting started on something. So let me, it's almost like a walking or running meditation or writing meditation. I'm just out in nature and I'm just figuring stuff out in my brain. And that has been really helpful for my mental health, for sure.
Yeah. I actually do feel the same way. I walk every day. I do my workout early in the morning. I get up at 5 a.m. and at 4:30, I'm already working out.
Yeah.
Because I have a 9-year-old son. So before he gets up, I
do. You want to have it done.
I work out. Because if I don't, then I don't feel good. You know, I need it.
Something's off.
Like coffee in the morning. I have to have it.
Yeah.
And then my day starts with, you know, making breakfast, and then he goes to school, and then I can work, and I just feel good. You know, I start my day in a good
space,
in a good space. Exactly. And walking is, I love walking.
Yes.
And whenever I feel down, I always tell my son too, whenever you don't feel good, just go out in nature.
Oh yeah. Take off your shoes and stand on the grass.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But because walking on a treadmill or walking in nature is different.
Two different things.
I mean, we are in Texas now, and sometimes I don't have a choice because it's 105 outside.
Oh, yeah. I can't even imagine. Yeah.
But anything is better than nothing, first of all, you know, especially in the heat, you know.
Yep.
Or even if you can jump on the treadmill, that's good too. But it feels different to be outside in nature.
There is a study that was published a couple of years ago, I want to say, that linked being outside in nature to be as effective in dealing with emotional change and depression as some types of drugs. Not that you would switch it out, but it has a very similar effect of connecting with nature. I'm sure in your show notes you can find the study, but it was a peer-reviewed study that showed us that being outside in nature has a similar effect to being on, you know, the antidepressant medicines and anti-anxiety medicines. So, you know, as a person who has done both, I also find that going out in nature just changes your perspective. And for me, it's the wonder of creation, right? You go out there and you look at a tree and it's just stunning, right? Yeah. So I stop thinking about this other stuff that can wait or isn't that important, or I've blown out of proportion or whatever it is, right? And I walk out into nature and put your feet in the grass. I remember one time I did not want to go for a walk. I was just, you know what? I'm just going to sit here, or whatever it was, some stupid thing. And I said,
procrastinating, right?
Procrastinating. I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to go for a walk. So, and it wasn't supposed to be a long walk. I was, you know, I said to myself, I'll go out, I'll walk for 20 minutes one way, I'll walk 20 minutes back. It'll be fine. And all of a sudden I'm just on this route because it's just pretty and I'm looking at people's gardens, and I live just off of Lake Erie and the Detroit River in Canada. So let me go walk down by the water because that always feels really good. And then I cut through this park on the way home, and I didn't know the park was on the migration path of the monarch butterflies. So as I'm walking through this park, there are monarch butterflies on like trees that look like leaves. And had I not gone for that walk, I would have missed that experience. And that's happened to me twice now, where I've been procrastinating and it's gotten late in the day, and this is not the usual time I go do my activity. I should have done it this morning, whatever it was. And I thought, I'm going to go walk down by the water. And the water where I was walking was also the migration path for swans. So there were all these swans in the lake. And I was like I took pictures of it. I go, can you believe this? I just decided to go for a walk because I should have gone for a walk, and I was feeling some kind of way. And I got to experience these swans, like hundreds of swans in the lake. I was like blown away. And you could even see them flying. I thought, every time my brain says, just get up and go for a walk, I have never regretted that. It's never been a bad decision.
Yeah. Everything happens for a reason. You had to be there at that time, you know.
For whatever reasons. Mm-hmm. If I didn't get up and go, I would have missed this one. And the monarch butterflies blew my mind. I took so much video of that. I put that up on my Instagram because I wasn't going to go for a walk. And then I was only going to walk around the block. And then something in my brain said to me, just go for it. Stop it. Just go. Like, you've got time. Nothing. This, all this other stuff can wait till you get back. It'll be here waiting for you when you get back. Do something that'll make you feel good. And it, again, it doesn't have to be a fast walk. I don't have to run. Some days it's a run. Some days it's a ride. I always say sometimes fast, sometimes slow, mm-hmm. sometimes yes, sometimes no. Like, I just kind of like, whatever.
Yeah, just listen to your body.
Yeah. Something. Yeah. And you always listen to your body first before you listen to anybody else.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my, what is it? Rule too.
Yeah.
That's my rule. Listen to your body. Even in my classes, and you know, I deal with women with chronic low back pain. And the rule is, if the pain is tolerable, that's okay. But if the pain stops you, then you either we need to change it or
the
you
exercise. Need to stop. Yeah. We need to find something else to do. I say that to everybody. Listen to your body first before you listen to me. And if you call me and we can find something else to do. There is always an adaptation, an accessible option, or something entirely different.
Yeah, because I don't believe in that. You have to, especially people with chronic low back pain. If you're training for something else, that's a different story. You know, like you're an athlete, whatever.
Yeah, an Olympic athlete or something. That's a whole different kind of person.
But if you're dealing with anything chronic, your body is telling you something.
And absolutely.
You don't need to push through the pain.
Nope. I wish we could get rid of that no pain, no gain mentality. Mm-hmm. It showed up in the late 70s, early 80s. I had heard that it had come from a Jane Fonda workout where that was said, and it took hold during that fitness craze. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's something I read on the internet somewhere.
Oh, wow. Very interesting. Yeah. So I have that rule in my classes too. If you feel any pain, I give you a modification or we do something else, or if the pain is there, maybe we need to stop
altogether. Yeah. Altogether.
Have you ever experienced back pain or?
Yes.
Joint pain?
Yes. I've had joint pain. I've had back pain. Not recently. When I was pregnant with my second child, I had that sciatica, which was fantastic. So it was at the end of my first pregnancy, it started, and, you know, I did all the things and, you know, once you have sciatica, you kind of always have it, kind of always flares up here and there. I've been really lucky not to have a flare in a very long time. I did have some chronic issues with my left SI joint that was like radiating through my back, and I thought I could fix it with yoga, and clearly I couldn't. So I ended up having to seek professional physiotherapy and all that. And it has been not an issue since, but once I have pain, I try to see if I can figure out what the root cause of the pain is and figure out what treatments there are for that pain, whether I do ultrasound or shock treatment or movement therapy or whatever it is. I don't think we should suffer unnecessarily. I think we've done enough of that already.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We all know the benefits of physical activity and exercise, but I feel like we still have to convince people.
Oh, I know. I know. I just had this conversation with my trainer. Because 20% of the population here in North America actually works out. It's only 20%. I was shocked. I thought it was more. Him and I were like looking it up the other day, and we are still at the part of our understanding of exercise as it is a modality to look better. For those of you who are listening to this, I've got air quotes going on. And I wish we could divorce this idea that your physical appearance is linked to this punishing exercise routine that you must do all the time to look a certain way. So I think a lot of us are still caught up in the idea that we exercise to look a certain way. Whereas we're moving our bodies, we have a movement practice, we enjoy physical movement because it makes us feel better, not only in our bodies, but in our mind and our emotions. But we're not there yet as a culture. And it's making me so frustrated because I'm like, I wish you could understand. I had a troll last year say to me, You know, because I post myself working out because I have a bigger body and I'm very active and I'm very athletic and I work out a lot. But this is just how my body is. These are my genetics. I can starve myself and develop an eating disorder and look like what you think a fit person looks like. Or I can eat well and move my body and look how I look, which is what a fit person looks like. And, you know, judging by the 2024 Olympics, we can see a plethora of what athletic bodies look like, what Olympic athletes look like, and they all don't look like one specific way. And so I remember some trolls saying to me when I was posting my workout video, you know, you're fat because you're lazy. And I just thought to myself, you're so funny. Like, you don't know anything about me. And I showed the comment to my trainer and they're like, God, if they only knew all the things you do. And then like a week later, I'm on Strava, which is linked to my iWatch. Strava sent out a year in review. And my year in review is I was in the top 1% of 3 million people on Strava that worked out consistently. I was in that top 1% of people who worked out consistently. And that was the video that Strava sent me. And so I posted on my Instagram, for the person who thinks I'm fat because I'm lazy, Strava seems to think that I'm in the 1% of 3 million people on that app. So I thought to myself, you don't know what a fit body looks like. And it doesn't look a certain way. It's how it feels. It's how you feel in your mind, in your body. It's how you know, are in relationships with other people. And the most important relationship, the one that you have with yourself. These are the things that move you through the world in a way that is positive and uplifting and inspiring and creates love and joy as opposed to misery and hate. So it starts with moving your body, even moving your finger a little bit, whatever it is. A friend of mine named Louise Green, who's a personal trainer, she's called Big Fit Girl, another person who shows us that, you know, fit bodies look all kinds of ways. She always says, it's not all or nothing. It is all or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And I do believe that society actually judges women who works out a lot because, oh, she only takes care of herself, you know, she does it for the look and, you know, but then if you don't take care of yourself, you're lazy.
Oh, you can't win. So,
you know, like you're either a mom who looks fit and, you know, when you pick up your child, oh, they point at you, oh, look at her, you know, she works out 5 times a week and does this she eats good and, you know, this and that. And that's a problem.
100%.
But then if you don't do that, you're
saying
lazy
something
mom.
As well.
Exactly. Yep. So you can't win. So at the end of the day, I think you should do whatever makes you happy.
100%. And you know what? The best thing you can do is the best weight you can lose. And I'm not a big proponent of, you know, pushing weight loss is lose the weight of other people's expectations. Like, you know what I mean? Other people's opinions of me are none of my business.
Exactly.
Other people, right? Good and bad. Their opinion of me is none of my business. It's totally their business. I don't need to hear about it. I don't want to know about it.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, Diane. Can you give 3 tips to someone who has autoimmune conditions, how to start exercising or, you know, how to start?
Yeah. So make sure that you consult your family physician and tell them what you're feeling, tell them where you're having trouble, whether it's an energy thing, to make sure you can get whatever you need, get regulated and treated. The first thing I would say, that would be the first place I would go. Go see your doctor, figure out what's going on with your body, see what you need to do. If you need to, you know, do something medically, if you need to do that, then of course, take care of that. We have the technology, use the technology. 2, start slow. And if you don't know where to start, maybe invest in a movement coach, like reach out to somebody and say to them, or even free, you probably can talk to somebody on Instagram or social media. You know, I'm new to movement practices. These are the things I like to do. What can you recommend? And that might be helpful. And 3, start with something you like. So if you like to walk, then walk. If you like to ride your bike, then ride your bike. If you like, you know, to play a game, my sister-in-law is currently obsessed with pickleball. Like, you know what I mean? She was like curious about, yeah, see? And recent studies that have come out by the National Institute of Health says pickleball is one of the number one ways to improve longevity because it's a physical sport slash practice that has strategy. So you're working your body and your mind. So that's something you put in your back pocket. Check out what, you know, go do different things. Like, don't be afraid. Call up a friend and say, hey, they've got yoga at the park. Will you go with me? Hey, there's like roller skating happening downtown. Make it fun. Find a friend that, you know, might be also interested in moving with you. And then you guys can make keep each other accountable through discipline, because you know that 3 days a week you're going to meet your friend and you're going to work out and it's going to be fun. Whatever it is that you choose to be a movement modality, make it fun, because if you're not having a good time doing it, you're not going to stick with it.
Thank you. Those are very good tips, Diane. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And thanks for everyone listening to the Back to Movement podcast with me, Bernadette, and our very special guest, Diane Bondi.
I hope
you enjoyed this episode and all the insights you learned about the exercise and autoimmune conditions. And this is all for this episode, folks, and see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.